Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your ordinary just won't do the music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica. Alright, first a word, a quick word. And that is, people who make albums and don't review music themselves should be unemployed.
Oh boy.
Woo! JK. Not really.
I once played piano when I was like 7.
I'm a former trombone player in the band.
That's I was clarinet.
Yeah, there's got to count for something.
Qualify.
That's right.
We're half a quartet.
That's just something that I felt, since we're in a spiritual mood today, I felt like I wanted to open with a genuine word. You were hearing at the beginning the Coachella Sunday Service version of Jesus Walks by Kanye West. Some things I can tell you about Coachella just right off the rip. It was early. John does not do early. It was early. That was a challenge. I want to say all committed religious people who on early on Sunday mornings really get it in, I salute that. That is not my strong suit. We are going to talk today about Sunday service. We are going to talk about the Stellar Awards, which is the Grammys of gospel music, which also happened to air the same day as Sunday service. And we are going to talk about the ways that gospel music has been, the DNA of gospel has been sneaking into some unexpected places in contemporary non-centrist popular music. And as I just said to Brianna Younger, who is sitting across from me right now, if Brianna didn't exist, I don't know if this particular episode of Popcast would exist, but she does, and we're here.
We're here.
Blessed and highly favored. Woo! Oh, yes. Wow. It's not Sunday morning, but we will do our best. We will try our best. Brianna Younger, the music editor at The New Yorker. Before we get into the specifics of Sunday service, tell me a little bit about your relationship to gospel.
Well, I very much grew up in a Southern Baptist household, a gospel household. My father was a member of Columbia House, so he therefore collected a million gospel CDs.
Phenomenal.
Just Mississippi Mass Choir, all of Richard Smallwood, all that throwback stuff. And very much grew up going to church every Sunday and was in the choir for a brief spell, though I cannot sing.
That's all right.
So don't.
That's all right. That's
don't
what the
ask
other.
Me.
That's what the other 40 people are for.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, so I just really love gospel music. I think it's one of the best genres of music. It's near and dear to my heart.
And you stay on top of it, which is one of the things I'm so grateful for about your writing. Is I know you pay attention to this stuff, and I feel like there's not enough critical attention really devoted to it.
Even before the moment we're having now, like, there is so much like intermingling between gospel and other genres.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very, I think, essential to at least be comfortable and familiar with what's going on in the gospel world, because so much of it is always informing what's going on in the secular world.
And now, as much as ever, it's going both directions.
Yes.
So let's talk about Ye. And one of the things we were talking about just before we started recording is there's like some fundamental differences between experiencing that performance live, as I did, shouts to everybody in La Quinta, California, and through the Periscope feed, which
that,
is how you took
that
it
angle
in.
Was so bad.
Okay, so you start. I'm curious to hear your perspective viewing it that way and what you took away from it. And then I'll sort of try to say how it lines up or doesn't with what it was like to be there.
To start, cinematically, I'm just not even entirely sure what that choice was about. Mm-hmm. That whole, I'm looking through a paper towel roll at Kanye do Sunday service. But at the very least, the stream gave you this kind of like panoramic and like bird's eye view of everything, which kind of made it very cult-like. Like the circle in the middle, and then the choir was in another circle round, and then like...
Right, those overhead shots were very...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and you couldn't...
It looked like signs, like crop circles.
Yeah.
And then the audience is like fenced off and kind of mad far away, and it just kind of seemed like everyone had arrived to worship at the altar of Kanye, and that was kind of odd.
Yeah, and I think what was striking is there, it didn't feel that way. I actually spent a not insignificant portion of the performance trying to figure out where Kanye was. Like, literally.
He wasn't on the feed a lot either.
It was strange because it wasn't immediately clear when he ascended onto the platform. And then when he was there, the way that the seating, quote unquote, was arranged, unless you were sort of on one of those other hills that were not where the kind of main crowd was, you didn't really have an angle onto who's doing what on the plateau. I mean, you could say, like, oh, those are dancers and, like, that's the choir. And, like, I understand that in the center of that are, like, a bunch of instruments and people on those instruments. But right. If you said, identify the person who's playing keys right now, I'm not sure I could have immediately spotted that. And given that Kanye was kind of, like, sort of in charge, but also kind of just sort of vibing, there were moments where I'm like, I don't know what he's doing. And so it became pretty clear by about, like, 9:45 in the morning or 9:50 in the morning, where I was like, oh, this is not a Kanye West concert.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Not even a little bit.
No.
And I would, in fact, if I were someone who woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning to see Mr. West.
Did you say 5:45?
Oh, even worse.
I want to, whoever was in the hotel room next to me, I feel bad for, because my alarms were going off.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Even the stream kind of felt weirdly voyeuristic, because like there were times where you just kind of weren't looking at anything. Mm-hmm. Or you were looking at someone or something that was not
the
main
thing.
Something.
Right.
Even now, I don't know the point.
So as spectacle, it fell short for you. What about as music?
Gospel music is always going to be great. And
right. It's like low-hanging. It's a little low-hanging fruit,
it's a cheat code, right?
Right.
But the combination of what was really, truly incredible music and Kanye West. It was kind of gross. Like, it just felt opportunistic. Like, you're talking about this music of the church, which is, like, historically where Black people go for refuge from and have been attacked by white supremacy, the church. And then you align yourself with, essentially, white supremacy. And then you bring the church to Coachella, which has interesting politics. And I wasn't entirely convinced that the Coachella audience was understanding how great this music
Although,
is.
Although, to be fair, I had the same exact feeling at Beyonce last year.
Fair.
You know what I'm saying? Fair. Like, I very vividly remember being in that audience and looking around and being like, some people here understand what's happening, and many people here do not even slightly understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And my sense, to sidebar a little bit about the kind of, like, relationship of Coachella to Black music— my sense is that Kanye decided, obviously post-Beyonce, but was basically like, oh, I understand what Beyonce brought to Coachella, and I want to do like a sort of parallel iteration.
I mean, Kanye
of
has a long history of wanting to be like Beyonce.
Oh,
it's actually incredible.
Oh, my.
He has admitted it. He looks up to
her. I know, but that's, wow, that's a whole different episode. Good Lord. But that's how it felt. It felt like, okay, what Beyonce did with a certain strain of Black history, he will do with the
less
church.
Less powerful.
Kanye's.
Like, yeah.
Oh, like no, sure.
Like, maybe if Beyonce put on a gospel concert, is it better? I don't know. It's interesting. It's uncomfortable putting gospel in that space. If you're like, I would like to see Kirk Franklin headline Coachella. How about that? Like, then it's different.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone else who's coming from a secular position and then is like diving headlong into gospel, even if they are in fact Christian and that's their background, it's going to be a little weird.
Do you believe fundamentally Kanye's relationship to his Christianity and to gospel as sort of a vehicle of spirituality is sincere, or does it feel, broadly speaking, craven?
We know it's sincere because it's always been there.
Yeah.
The display of it has become less sincere over time, I think. Like, I think Jesus Walks was real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was real.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sunday service, not real.
I don't know. I think it maybe is not real in the sense that everything in Kanye land is slightly less real than it was 10 to 15 years ago. There is this kind of pinballing thing with Ye, where it's like, I'm talking to Trump, back on my Christian shit. Like, I'm just, you know, and maybe they're all the same to him.
But we're talking about someone who recently came to see himself as a god, which kind of doesn't square, right? If you're
sure.
sincerely being quote unquote Christian, religious, spiritual,
right.
whatever.
Right.
Like it felt like we were worshiping at the altar of Kanye.
And it's funny because to me, I was expecting it to be far more ego driven. The thing that ended up being so surprising over the course of those 90 minutes or whatever was I kept being like, there's not that there's no yay here, because it's obviously it's embedded in the DNA of the enterprise and the kind of audacity of making all these poor kids wake up at very early. Trust me, it was very early. But that
$50 for socks, lest we forget.
Well, like, you know, as someone who's bought some expensive socks in his day, it's like, you know, I can't get too bent out of shape about that.
Fair. I digress.
Flex. But over and over, like when I was typing my notes, I kept basically being like, where's yay? No yay. Lack of yay. And interestingly, like no one else was introduced. I mean, obviously you noticed people, like when DMX shows up, you know that's DMX.
I mean, I think the idea was for it to not be ego-driven, but it was still somehow very ego-driven.
Again, it's so interesting. Maybe it felt less that way because I've just watched Kanye be so ego-driven for so many different in so many different formats, in so many different places over the years.
Let's think about this, though, right? So you've been, first of all, you plant the seeds for Yandy. Then you start with this.
Yandy's about to be, like, detoxed, though.
Social media, Kim Kardashian-sponsored Sunday service whisperings, where we're just only seeing these clips on, you know, Twitter. And then you get to Coachella, where you're supposed to headline. You drop out of it because mm-hmm. they won't build you a dome, and then you renege to have Sundays. So like, you certainly didn't do this to bring the good people the gospel.
No, although that has never been his primary relationship to a lot of the music that we're going to talk about later in this episode. That is its primary
right.
directive, and it's never really been Kanye's primary directive. Although, I don't know, when, like, say when Ultralight Beam came out, you know, when mm-hmm. Pop, I did have that moment where I was like, oh, if this turned into like a profitable, and I don't mean financially, but I mean like a culturally or spiritually, that might be an intriguing direction for him. But
I don't think the greatness of Ultra Light Beam is Kanye's. I think it's Kirk Franklin.
And Farnsworth Bentley. Don't disrespect
and Kelly Price. Mm-hmm. Like there were a lot of people involved in that record that made it the sanctified thing that it was mm-hmm. that I don't think, like, Kanye certainly curated it. He got them mm-hmm. in the room together, but I don't know how much of it was Kanye's vision.
Let's listen to the most exuberant, ecstatic, thrilling harmony parts of Ultralight Beam, which may or may not include Kanye West.
One of my favorite Kanye songs. You cannot mess with the light. Look at the channel from 79. We on a ultralight beam. We on a ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything. Hallelujah. Everything. I'm trying to keep my faith. But I'm looking for more. Somewhere I can feel safe. And in my holy world.
Father, this prayer's for everyone that feels they're not good enough. This prayer's for everybody that feels that they're too messed up. For everyone that feels they said I'm sorry too many times. You can never go too far when you can't come back home again. That's why I need...
And just as a sidebar about Ye, one of the things I think we're seeing more and more in kind of like, I don't know if this is like mid-period Ye. I don't know where late, you know, I don't know if we're in mid or late. It's tough to say. Yeah, exactly. That, whatever look you just had in your eyes, that's justified. In general, his move to either decenter himself or alternately corral the team. And I think this starts with the fantasy sessions, and it kind of is like, I'm the creative director. I'm the creative director of Kanye West. And that means that I maybe don't make the beats in the same way anymore, and I maybe don't write the rhymes in the same way anymore, and da da da. But the business is bigger than any one of those things.
And for what it's worth, I think I believe Sunday Service 2 years ago, like pre MAGA hat, like pre all of that, I might believe it more. Mm-hmm. Like if Sunday Service happened right after, like you went from the Garden to Sunday Service, mm-hmm. I might would go for that. Like, okay, it's kind of fire, especially mm-hmm. since he was all, this is going to be my gospel album anyway.
Yep.
It would make sense. But today, it just felt like you were weirdly trying to endear yourself to people you had lost by using something that's sacred to them.
Do you think you think it is 100% that craven?
Nothing is that black and white, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't believe Kanye just sat there and masterminded some marketing scheme and he was like, you know what? Black people really love them some gospel. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he was thinking that way.
No, and this is a person who, like, on Ye has a whole song, Wouldn't Leave, that's basically like, black people aren't going to abandon me.
Right.
You know.
But I do think he's not oblivious to the fact of, this could be good for me, generally mm-hmm. speaking.
My feeling is 6 months from now or a year from now, he'll be on something else. Like, it doesn't feel like a committed, like this is the direction. It feels like many things in kind of, say, post-2010 Kanye, an interesting sidebar. There's a lot of parentheticals.
But the fact that it's always been there in different iterations, like from Jesus Walks and then like even Yeezus and I Am a God and like mm-hmm. all that entire situation. Like, and mm-hmm. then we get to I'm making a gospel album. So certainly it makes sense that mm-hmm. we have arrived at this point. It's just everything that happened in the interim makes it icky.
Do you feel like when Kanye did those earlier records, are those blaspheming records? Like, are they perceived as such?
I know several Christian listeners who were extremely offended mm-hmm. and felt him calling himself a god was blasphemous. Me personally, I'll give him the artistic space to play around with that. And also, Kanye, to a lot of people, is a demigod, mm-hmm. and he knows that, and everyone else knows that. And we gave him that power. We made him believe this to be true about himself. And so I don't think it's blasphemous, like, oh, we should stone Kanye or anything.
Right.
But it's uncomfortable mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. because of who he is and how he acts.
Mm-hmm. If Kanye was deliberately orienting himself by his proximity to saved people, if that was his primary orientation, he maybe wouldn't do those records. But I don't think that that's his primary orientation.
True.
Speaking of how Kanye kind of like orients himself or who he's orienting himself towards or in relationship with, an interesting thing that's kind of came up prior, frankly, to the Coachella Sunday Service and earlier Sunday Service, but which he reprised at Coachella, were these kind of versionings of well-known gospel songs, primarily from the 90s and 2000s. So there's this version of where he's kind of taking snippets of a Fred Hammond record called This Is the Day. Let's listen to the Hammond original and then a little bit of the Kanye Baltimore Club remix or Jersey Club remix or whatever it was.
Shout to the Lord in here. You know that he's good and his mercy endures forever. And the people of God said, they said, what the? And the people of God said, yeah. The people of God said, yeah. Now we serve notice to depression, confusion, all manner of evil and every sickness. You came in a bind, but you cannot stay, cause the people of God, we ain't having it. It's a good day, even though I cried last Tuesday and I was out of cash by Friday.
So here's Kanye basically doing, it's almost like mid-2000s Kanye. It's like, I'm just going to chop up this sample. It just so happens that the sample is anointed. You know, like he's treating it in that way. And I was wondering, when you were watching this or watching any of the earlier videos, did that like set off any triggers for you, either positive or negative?
I mean, I really enjoyed the gospel arrangements, like the arrangement of How Excellent was phenomenal. The choir was amazing. The musicians were amazing. The gospel fan in me appreciated the musicality and the reimagining of these classics into essentially a festival ready way. Like I thought it was incredible.
I wonder if in decontextualizing some of these samples, some of these older songs, does it remove kind of the spiritual core of the record? Like if you're not going to play the Fred Hammond song all the way through, if you're really just going to take two bars or four bars and loop it up,
I mean,
what are you losing and what are you gaining?
I think the whole reason anyone would chop it up, right, or incorporate it in any way is because of the spiritual nature. Like, unless you just take such an obscure part of it that we can't even recognize what
it is. Sure, can't identify.
You're always going to, like, feel, you know, spiritually inclined, and that's what's going to make it compelling, and that's what makes it interesting. And hopefully, maybe someone went and looked up Fred Hammond after all this, right, or Richard Smallwood or whoever. And as far as what we lose, I don't think there is much to be lost, because people who like the song are going to like the song anyway.
Right.
And chances are we're not canceling out the original for the Kanye West version. I think, you know.
Right. I mean, you know, we'll check back in 5 years.
Oh, God. So, I wonder if they're playing Ultralight Beam in churches now, though.
Are they?
I would wonder.
I'm curious.
I haven't stepped foot in a church in quite a minute.
Okay. Well, if anybody has been in a church where they played Ultralight Beam, email us at popcastnytimes.com. Yeah, we want to know. Popcastnytimes.com. Or frankly, or Jesus Walks. Or that's any Kanye anything. West music. Gold Digger.
Or even not even Kanye. I might have heard they play like All Right. Kendrick Lamar's All Right in church.
Well, you know, Christian rapper.
Sure.
Shouts to Reggie. Shouts to Reggie writing that definitive piece back in the day.
It's an incredible piece. Go read it. It's on BuzzFeed.
Yes. So, okay. I came home from Sunday service, or to my hotel. I wrote for a few hours, filed, click on the TV. I'm just like, I got to decompress. And what do I see?
The Stellar Awards. Happy Easter. Woo! He has risen.
Yo, first of all, Stellar Awards is still one of the few award shows that are like broadcast on a major network. It's on BET this year for the first time in a long time. But that is not live or quasi-live. Like, I think it happened, you know, two weeks ago or 3 weeks ago or whatever. So the Stellar Awards were on. And I was like, okay, this is two stars are aligning. This is too perfect. So I sat down and I watched the Stellar Awards. I ordered up some Domino's and I watched Stellar Awards.
I need you to order better pizza.
I know. Well, I mean, to be fair, La Quinta, California, I'm not sure I could have gotten better pizza on short notice.
Fair enough.
Although, if you also know where there's great pizza in La Quinta, California, email us, podcastnytimes.com, for next year. So the Stellar Awards. One of the things that I was struck by about the Stellars this year, and I feel like I've watched most of the last decade of the Stellars, maybe missed 1 or 2 years. The turnover of younger talent seems to be happening at a faster pace than it has. Now, the gospel charts do not move fast. You can look at the gospel charts now and 6 months from now and 6 months ago, and I would venture to say 3/4 overlap, 2/3 overlap.
Ish.
Yeah, it's like country music in a way.
Though when I looked it up today to prepare for this, I was actually relatively surprised.
What was on there that you were happy to see?
Well, it wasn't even what was on there. What was gone? When I wrote, I believe it was last August, about secular artists being on the gospel charts,
yes,
all of them are gone. Charlie Wilson is gone. Mm-hmm. Nicki Minaj is gone. Snoop Dogg is gone.
Off the songs charts. Yeah, they were all on the songs charts. Yes.
I was like, oh, the phenomenon has ended.
Well, yes, that felt like an outbreak. That was like a quick outbreak. But also the number one, I'm looking at the Billboard Gospel Albums chart, number one album, The Essential Kirk Franklin, just a Kirk Franklin compilation. How many weeks has it been on the chart? 168. So this stuff doesn't really move. You know, you look at the albums chart, there's like a Marvin Sapp best of, a bunch of Aretha, the Tasha Cobbs EP from like 3 years ago.
Aretha has been on there since she passed.
That's true story. It's a lot of stuff that's been on. I mean, here's a Tamla Man album that's been on the charts for 267 weeks. So not a crazy amount of turnover in the gospel charts. On the centrist side.
Though gospel does admittedly move slow even from a production standpoint, it'd be kind of even more weird if they were putting out at a rap pace.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then the chart stays the same.
Right, right. Absolutely. So there were a few performers and nominees at the Stellars this year who clearly were the center of attention. Let's listen to Make Room by Jonathan McReynolds.
My schedule, you can move that old. My itinerary, you can move that old. Oh, see,
all right, so Jonathan won a gang of Stellars.
He was the man of the evening.
He just won a gang of Stellars. And I thought he had a lovely speech about making room, more room for the Lord in his life.
And on his shelf.
Right. But more importantly, right. Just a lot of, I feel like we have enough room in here, probably. There's probably enough room in here. So we're taking Jonathan McReynolds' advice to heart. Let's explain who Jonathan McReynolds is and kind of like what his sound is, because there was something when he came out, was like 5 years ago or 4 years ago. I'm trying to remember when he first kind of like started popping off. There was something kind of like purposely quiet and intimate and small scale about him. And it did not feel consistent at the time with kind of like the center of where gospel was. So I, for one, was surprised to see him basically be the belle of the ball. Now, what is your take on Make Room? And that's the name of the song and the album, I believe, as sort of a piece of work. And kind of how does it fit in big picture with contemporary gospel?
Something happened with Travis Green.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And guitars.
Oh, yeah.
And gospel music.
Speak on it.
And so I think in laying kind of, I don't want to call it a foundation because, you know, nothing is super new. If you go far back enough, you'll find
examples of everything.
There was like this moment where almost seemingly to get into the idea that gospel should co-mingle with like other genres. You saw a lot of hip hoppers coming in. You saw a lot of like weird, like urban pop style gospel happening. And then also came these guitars where it was just kind of like folksy almost.
And very, very, very deliberately like non-choir, like not choir driven. Like it's like the opposite.
Like singer-songwriter gospel.
Yes, exactly right.
He's having this moment because it's a good way to sing gospel, right? Like it's there's something to the choir for sure, but there's also something to kind of almost just getting rid of everything else and just being like present. And I think you accomplish that.
I also think it is a possibly there is a shadow influence of CCM because if you listen, like when I travel, I get in the car, I turn the radio to the local CCM station, a local Christian rock station. Because, like, to me, CCM is contemporary Christian music, if you don't know. Obviously, maybe there's a station in New York. I don't know. But, like, why would I just wouldn't listen to it in New York. But, like, if I'm in, like, Oklahoma or something, or Texas or whatever, like, I want to listen to something I don't ordinarily listen to. So it's like I'm listening to, like, Corridos and CCM. And that aesthetic in contemporary Christian music is actually the standardized aesthetic.
The one.
Especially following, there was like a kind of early, maybe even to late 2000s of like kind of quasi hard rock, like you're sort of like your Mercy.
And I think it's it also aligns with mega churches that are like non-denominational. Because you're starting to see, like, especially like in places like Charlotte, where
shout out David
Turner. Like, hey, David, where it's just kind of, it's not Baptist, it's not particularly black, but it's also not particularly white.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just this mixed congregation, mm-hmm. and it's like that style of music just kind of slots in.
Right. It's like a it's like a weird common ground. Yes. Although it's really not, because to me, especially when I hear it completely decontextualized from black gospel, basically, you realize just how kind of like attitudeless and swaggerless and kind of, you know.
Yeah,
not the belief in God is not swagger. Just want to be clear. I don't want to get any emails about that.
Angry emails incoming. Seriously.
But the music itself, it's like aspirated kind of in a way. But I do think because that has been such a dominant, you know, Chris Tomlin type stuff for 10 to 15 years.
And when Chris Tomlin is probably what? The Kirk Franklin of
Christian? Yo, in my first year at the paper, one of the concerts I reviewed in the first few months was like a big Chris Tomlin show. And I was like, blown away at the scale of it, but I was also like, where's the songs? Where are the slaps?
And also, Israel Houghton, also another mm-hmm.
yes, good example.
Phenomenal guitar,
mm-hmm.
kind of Christian, but also gospel, because you know, we have to make even the charts mm-hmm. make those differences. Right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the Travis Greene into the Jonathan McReynolds thing, I wonder if it's like some of that weird soft energy trickling into gospel, because usually I sort of associate the trickle being the other way, that some of the energy is going, but it's basically like, how can we just squeeze it down to like its barest essence?
Would it be weird, if not cynical, because I'm not trying to be cynical, to say that, like, is it good for crossover?
Like, yeah, but to what though? To white Christian communities?
Yeah.
To white Christian communities? Possibly.
Or to, you know, just your 20,000 congregation megachurch.
Like, but here's a fair question, and I don't know the answer. And actually, maybe if someone who's listening knows the answer, I'd love to know. Next person we'll talk about is like Jacqueline. We'll talk about Jacqueline Carr. I wonder, speaking of crossover, if Jonathan McReynolds is more likely to get played in white Christian congregations in those, or his songs in, you know, by worship leaders in those communities, than a Jacqueline. Or something. Oh,
absolutely.
I mean, I know the answer is yes. I just want someone to tell me.
Is he on the Christian charts, though? That's what
let's see. So in the Billboard index page for Jonathan McReynolds, it does not say that he's been on any Christian charts.
Interesting.
He has been on the adult R&B charts, though. Hey, get your Ken money. That's right.
Okay, crossover. Secular crossover.
That's like a crossover I wasn't expecting. It says he's been on hot gospel songs, top gospel albums, gospel airplay, digital song sales, and streaming songs. But no Christian. And
it's interesting how those distinctions are made, because it does seem very
adult R&B. That's the one.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It just seems racial, like just on its nose.
No, it doesn't seem, it is racial. It doesn't merely seem racial.
Well, you know, Billboard recently told us they're not making decisions based on race. So
I've already called those people out on a prior podcast. It would seem churlish to just go back and do it again. But yeah, this is very clearly what this is. Unless you're Tori Kelly. Oh,
is she on both?
I think she's on both. I know
she's on gospel for sure.
She's definitely on gospel. She also got did you see she got nominated for a Stellar?
Yes.
Yo, Scooter Braun is so powerful. It's nuts.
In the gospel world.
Even in the gospel world, they're scared of Scooter. Well, they think one day, 7 years from now, Justin Bieber might show up for like a videotaped segment at the Stellars in like, you know, 2024.
No, we don't need it.
Okay. I'm not advocating. I'm just saying.
Tori's voice is nice though.
I agree, but like, should she have won the Grammy for Best Gospel Album this year over Jacqueline, Jonathan, the Walls Group?
Jacqueline would sing circles around.
That's
Tori
what I'm
Kelly
saying.
And Tori.
Hell, even the Walls Group would sing circles. All right, let's talk about Jacqueline. Jacqueline had a hell of a performance. Oop, I shouldn't say hell of a.
Ow.
Oh my God. Jacqueline had a heck of a performance at the Stellars. Let's listen to Stay With Me.
Sure.
Okay, this is Jacqueline Carr. Stay With Me.
Stay with me.
So she really went in, kicked the shoes off, kicked the shoes off. Dogs are barking.
She's giving me patty tees.
Woo.
Or Fanny, Fantasia, shout out.
True. A future Stellar Award winner, most certainly, sometime in the next 10 years, probably.
We need it.
I'm ready. I've been ready.
Fantasia, please.
It's kind of weird that it hadn't gone that direction already.
I feel like once you go over, right, then you're just over there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, explain Jacqueline singing. Besides the fact that
she has that old school, like, I'm leading the choir. Mm-hmm. The song gonna be 10 minutes long because mm-hmm. we just going in. Her voice, it's very raw. Like, it's a raw voice. Mm-hmm. And like, even like on her records, like, you can sometimes hear like the little scratch.
Yeah.
Like when she,
which is not always.
Yeah. Like, gospel music is about just expressing how it comes out. And she's just so young. And I love that about her. I remember her early records. I didn't even know how young she was, because I believe they said she's like, what, 23 or something?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember her records when she was like 19, 20. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she's just phenomenal.
And again, it's what we were saying before. I remember watching the Stellars 5 to 10 years ago and feeling like you're kind of getting rough. It's like, you're just like reshuffling the Mahjong tiles. It's like, I've seen these tiles before, but like, they're just maybe in a different order.
I think with Jacqueline, though, you don't see it when they're so young. It's especially in 2019, right?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, although Corin Hawthorne, pretty young.
She performed in a more traditional sense, which I'm glad she didn't do Wanna Do It mm-hmm. and did something more. Because I'm just a sucker for like the slow, like mm-hmm. praise and worship kind of mm-hmm. song. So I think for Corin, that moment was also like I can do this as well.
But Corin comes with a particular set of baggage, which is Corin did not come in through the church. I mean, not that she didn't come to the church, but she came in through The Voice.
Right.
Which is something I actually, because I stopped watching The Voice after like the third season, so I actually did not know that she was on The Voice until I was Googling around to study up. So she was a finalist on The Voice, I don't know, TK years ago. She was not as good as she is now.
No.
When she was on The Voice, she's good, but she was not as good as she is now. And then it's weird when you look at even the album art of herself, like, she got the full makeover. Like, they really...
Oh, they went all in.
They went all in. And she is not the first gospel star to come out of a reality setting. Mandisa obviously came out of a reality setting. But the speed with which they kind of, like, put it into overdrive with her, I think, is impressive. And she is a very good singer, but like you say, her biggest hits are not
the ballad. No. The ballad. The what is the ballad of gospel?
Right. Yes. the ballad / aria of God. Let's listen to. I mean, Won't He Do It is the one. Listen to a little bit, but I also want to listen to Unstoppable.
Okay.
The Lecrae record. We'll get to Lecrae. So let's listen to a little bit of Won't He Do It, and then this is Unstoppable.
My shine. They try to break me, try to take me out, but I got Jesus on my side. So bad I thought I would die, but ain't no power stronger than the one that came and laid down his life. And I got mountains to climb, but the enemy can't stop me, cause there's a calling on my life. So when I'm crying, don't last too long, cause
felt like when Corin showed up to the Stellars, like you said, it was very much like, no, I do this.
Right.
I know you haven't always seen me do this, and I know I kind of like slid in the back door a little bit, but like, I do this. But it didn't come off as kind of effortless as when Jacqueline was doing what Jacqueline does, because I think that's...
Well, I think also, to your point, their way in was so different, right? Like, I remember 2-3 years ago, like, Jacqueline, essentially the live videos you would see of her were in these, like, smallish churches. And she's just, like, going in. Whereas, and she was independent-ish. Mm-hmm. Whereas Corin did get a label behind her pretty much immediately. And they really kind of packaged it. So she didn't have to do the church circuit, which is a very kind of important part.
Absolutely.
Like, when you hear a live gospel album, it's more than likely performed in somebody's church.
Yep.
And it's the real deal.
And also from a dues-paying perspective, I mean, it's doing clubs for rappers. Or, you know, it's
right,
like,
exactly.
it's the same thing. A couple years ago, I did a story where I was following around Kalante, Gavin, Bree Babineaux. We were in Alabama, and they're basically just taking the road show, you know? Just like, we're here this weekend, we're going to be there next week, and we're going to be there. And it's just, that was their dues-paying. And it was all, speaking of early morning concerts. but again, that was their dues paying. I had not seen that in the gospel world. I mean, I had seen versions of it in other genres, but I'd never seen what it looked like in gospel.
Even how, like, Jacqueline was just in Brooklyn this past, for Easter, actually. She was in Brooklyn for Easter Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see Tasha Cobb still very much, Tasha Cobb's Leonard,
yes,
still very much in the church.
Yes.
I haven't looked up to see if, like, Corin is doing that now, but certainly... there's not this abundance of videos of her just in that element.
Right. What's interesting to me about some of these singers, and I think for me, Bree really did fall into that, is, you know, Bree's breakout was off an Instagram video or a YouTube video off and whatever. You know, it was not, as you say, a church video. Same thing with Kalante, is off a Twitter or a YouTube thing. And I wonder, do you think that the industry will ever kind of like reorient itself more aggressively to support people who didn't come in through the traditional pathways?
I mean, ideally not. It could get a little weird if you started seeing, you know, record representatives in the sanctuary scouting for, like, it's a little weird. It's a little off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just kind of curious about the business of gospel in terms of, like, how those things get booked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have, like, a booking agent who, like, calls up New Bethel Baptist Church and is like, so, you want to have Tamla come in?
Right.
Like, I don't know how any of that works. But.
I've got to assume there are people who specialize in that. I mean, you know, it's like in the same way, like with like rock bands or rappers where there are like, you know, there's like certain rooms in New York that like an indie rock band that's from the Midwest that has like a certain number of fans is like most likely to play, you know, like you're most likely to play the Mercury Lounge or whatever. Like, I'm sure there's like a booker at the Mercury Lounge who knows the tour manager of the whoever band. And
but
those
is that
are
like the business of church.
Well, there's a lot of business of church.
This is true.
So let's keep that in mind. There are no shortage of church business, but I do think that there's gotta be some kind of infrastructure for that. There has to be. You don't think?
I guess it's just weird to think about.
Okay, so the main winners this year, McReynolds, Hawthorne, Carr. Talk briefly about the Walls Group. No, you're out? Okay, I'll talk about the Walls Group. It's four performers. Let's listen to My Life.
I don't want to be that lie to make a second guess who I'm representing. And no, I'm not perfect. No, I'm not ashamed to confess. I just want you to see that I'm trying. And no, it's not a game. Ain't gonna lose no sleep over what people say. Baby.
offense, but I just think it needs to be said. Y'all don't really get the picture. Focus your attention on what really matters instead. Leave it or not, I'm with you. Don't get too caught up in what you see on the-
So one of the reasons I like the Walls Group is they are very enthusiastic and high energy. I don't know, it's... Especially if the McReynolds wing is kind of like taking the center of chart landing, award winning gospel, there's still something kind of like loose about the Walls Group that I find really appealing. And we talked briefly about Kalante Gavin before. What did you think of his performance?
Oh, he killed it. He's such a natural. That voice?
Whew.
I can see why someone found him on YouTube.
Real talk. You've seen the original YouTube video of him? He's singing, "I Won't Complain."
That's one of my mother's favorite songs.
It's one of my favorites.
It's one of the ones like, you know, the songs like, don't touch it unless you know.
Right.
It's true. Or facts.
Yes.
You got it.
He sang it in his high school lunchroom and the lunch lady filmed it and put it on YouTube or where, whatever it was. It's a MySpace.
He killed it.
I won't complain.
Like, because I was, when I was watching the stream, I was, like, in other windows, like, doing whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you hear that voice, and you click in the window, like, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Miranda?
Yes. So Miranda Curtis, were they performing as, like, kind of like I couldn't tell. Was it, like, a new artist type of thing, or it was some kind of section? So Miranda Curtis, who I was not up on before this year's Stellar Awards, and I feel very shamed for that, because... Wow, can Miranda Curtis sing? Let's listen to Nobody Like You, Lord by Miranda Curtis.
And when I consider your heavens and the works of your hands, say, nobody at your name, every demon must flee. It's strong enough to fight for me.
So it was interesting hearing her just after Kalante, because there's something very loose and fluid. He's not trying to be sexy at all, but it's right. Like there's a real physicality and the way that he uses his body in performance. I mean, this is something that, I mean, this dude was, when I saw him in Alabama, too, like he was like literally speaking in tongues, like just going running all over. And he was very physically in it.
It's almost like a Kirk Franklin. If Kirk Franklin were also an extremely strong vocalist, right? Like you bring this energy.
Thank you. Okay, well, that's been said.
What?
No, you're not wrong. I just, it's, no one talks about it, but that's okay. That's why.
About Kirk Franklin?
Not being, I mean.
I mean, he's fine, but I feel like we all accept him as a producer and arranger and a phenomenal overall.
A spirit
artist.
Guide.
Yeah.
Can we talk briefly about Kirk Franklin's outfits on the Stellars? Wow. Who's Kirk Franklin's stylist?
Listen.
That's, I would like to know.
I want to know who did the Millie Rock video styling. I was at that concert in DC.
Yeah.
That little tunic situation.
Anyway, if you are Kirk Franklin's stylist, please email me at podcastnytimes.com. I'd like to speak with you. But back to Miranda Curtis. So after the kind of intense, sinewy physicality of Kalante, Miranda just goes up and just pipes.
Full-on gospel diva.
Just pipes. I mean, it was very impressive. Even,
like, the gown. Like, yes. She was...
That was... And hers was the voice that I had the strongest. You had that reaction to Kalante. I had that reaction to Morant. Like,
It was both.
It was... I was very, very struck by how impressive a singer she was. And relatively new to the genre, but again...
She didn't even have a wiki.
Is that true?
I looked.
Okay, someone get on that. Maybe if you're her PR person, maybe this would be a great moment for... For her to get a Wikipedia page.
Because we are checking for Miranda Curtis.
That's true. That's true. It's very true. Okay. I'm at the part of the show that I'm like most anxious about. Gospel rap. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We talked about Lecrae before. Lecrae had an album with Zaytoven recently.
Make the Trap Say Amen.
That's true. So this album, Two Men of God. Zaytoven.
Lecrae.
And for those who don't know, Zaytoven, church organist.
Renowned church organist for Gucci Mane.
Yes, right. Don't ever let them tell you Gucci Mane is not close to God. Right. Don't ever let them tell
Perhaps you saw him on NPR's Tiny Desk.
That's true. That's actually, yes, good point. I had forgotten about that.
I had to get back right. Fell off, lost my cool. Whoa, say, bounce back, got dirt on my shoes. Come back, right. When you got real power, you can't lose. Get back right. Get back right. Yeah, top down, head back. Ride by the hype beast on Fairfax. Money morning, I don't wanna hear trap. I play Rick James when I'm in traffic. I've been doing this since fifth grade. Doing this since I've been saved. I've been rock crowds on a big stage. I've been made hits with some big names. Yada, 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 yada. Bought a Mercedes for my baby mama. VIP rocking Dolce & Gabbana. I went to the Grammys and I took my mama. Bottles on bottles on bottles and models on models on models and dollars on dollars. Yeah, that don't help me with my soul when I holler and I'm feeling the pain and I'm dealing with drama. Woo! That's too deep. Yeah, guess I better fall back. Nah, get this work. You should've wore a hard hat. They told us don't work in the summer. I told them I'm working on something. I'm waving my banner, no propaganda. Why you flexing in your Panamera? Get back, right. I had it. Get back, right. Get back, right. I had it. Get back, right. Get back, right.
Get back. So this album, Lecrae's been making records for a long time. Mm-hmm. And this album is like...
He went forth into it.
He did, but it's funny because I'm just thinking... We were talking a little bit about crossing over before... This does not feel like a crossover to me. This feels like, I almost want to say a logical endpoint, or like when you're driving and you get to the end of the cul-de-sac and you're like, I can't go any further. So I'm just going to go back the other way. I can't. But this is the end of the cul-de-sac. Like, this feels like, okay, I can do this record with Zaytoven. It's still like thematically what I do. As you were saying, the flows are very specific and contemporary, but I don't know that he'll ever push beyond this to something more formally secular. I don't know. What do you think?
Lecrae has an extremely strong brand in gospel music at this point. Mm-hmm. He's essentially the gospel rapper. Like, if you don't know any other one, you know Lecrae. If you played this album and we didn't tell you it was Lecrae, I don't know that you would readily recognize.
Really? What you only think just the lyrical choices?
I mean, you would notice the lack of profanity.
Yeah.
The lack of certain themes. But I don't, like, it's not, oh, come get saved. It's not really what it's about.
Sure.
But I think for Lecrae, he would have to become so frustrated where he is that he decides to go another direction with it.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, though, because I think there's also, you know, the inherent knowledge that you're not going to succeed in contemporary hip hop if you're not profane,
yeah.
If you're not generally terrible.
Mm-hmm. As a human being.
As a human being.
Sorry, just clarifying.
Unless you're Chance.
I just want to say Brianna had promised not to speaketh Chance the Rapper's name on this episode. Not at my prodding.
No, it just prodding. He just seems so obvious. If we're talking about gospel and secular music, I just think Lecrae, because you saw Molly Music kind of make that transition,
yes.
Right?
He
kind
of he
left this, like, the strictly gospel thing, and then
he signed to a straight secular label. Like, didn't he sign to a straight secular label? Like,
he
Sony
did,
RCA?
But he's not making. It's still not, you know, gonna be on your radio next to the Chris Brown or whatever. Like,
But my music is dope.
Oh no, facts. He's incredible, but it's positive music. Like it's yes. where it's where you, like the in between of gospel and secular is just like being weirdly wholesome. Like you're not specifically talking about God. You're not specifically talking about anything like profane or sexual or whatever. You're just
Chance the Rapper. And just as a sidebar, though, with speaking of he who shall not
Chance,
be named.
Chance curses. Shout out.
Does he?
Does he not?
I guess he does.
I was going to say.
I don't know. I guess his vocal tone is so optimistic. I sometimes forget.
Yeah, facts.
It's like camouflaged in positivity.
I mean, I think Chance works, though, because he realizes the very human nature of you can go to church on Sunday and then also someone might piss you off on Monday right. and you might have to just
yes.
get it off.
But speak with that in mind. Okay, so something to kind of tie it back to the Kanye conversation at the beginning. When I was watching The Stellars and like me having in mind knowing Nicki Minaj was on a Tasha Cobbs record and you mentioned there's like a T.I. record that was on the gospel or a T.I. feature that was on a gospel song. I mean, that was on a song that was on the gospel charts.
It was Charlie Wilson,
right. And I was trying to think about gospel as kind of like a space that protects itself. And I was like, would they ever invite Tasha and Nicki to perform at the Stellars? And then I was thinking about Chance and Kendrick. Could they have a home at a place like the Stellars? And then obviously I'm thinking about Ye. And I'm like, oh, what is it? Now, my answer, my suspicion is that none of those things would ever happen. But do you think there's a chance?
I mean, I think those conversations are very actively still happening because when Kirk Franklin collabed with Kanye and mm-hmm. Chance, like there was the whole Instagram post of defending his position.
Yes, of course.
And there was support and then there was no. And then the same with Tasha Cobbs and Nicki Minaj. There was the whole having to publicly defend your position and then their support and then there was no. And so I think gospel's currently trying to reconcile it within themselves because the teachings suggest that Chance, Kendrick, Kanye, whoever should be welcome at the Stellar Awards mm-hmm. if the messaging is on point, that they should be able to find quote-unquote redemption, that you can be imperfect and still step into a sacred space.
Yes.
So I think.
And there, for what it's worth, there are people who are on the stage at Stellars who have things that we shall not speak of.
I think gospel is still trying to find a way to reconcile that within itself. And also, what I would not like to see is a situation where, I don't know, if Nicki Minaj made a gospel album, right? And then you bring Nicki on to the Stellar Awards at the expense of someone else.
I just felt like I started sweating profusely just thinking about
like,
that.
Like, as a guest, like if Tasha Cobbs brought Nicki Minaj out, perfect, right. Cool, wonderful. If mm-hmm. Kirk Franklin brought Chance the Rapper and Kanye out, cool, perfect, wonderful. Do I believe we should give Kanye West a space on the Stellar Awards that could go to someone else? People work their entire lives for that stage, right?
Right.
To just, I called up Kirk Franklin and now here I am. Right, but
so you're basically saying it would be like Tori Kelly winning the Gospel Grammy.
So she's at least committed to being gospel.
This week. No shots. Shots, but no shots.
Tori did nothing to deserve.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize the Tori Kelly defense squad was going to be on podcast. No one told me. I was not anticipating that twist.
I like her song with the Cray.
She has a lovely voice.
She does.
Yeah, please don't strike me down.
Again, though, to Kaylin.
Okay.
And so, I do think there is a discussion to be had for as much as we've been joking about Tori Kelly mm-hmm. about her space in gospel music. Because mm-hmm. is it an Eminem situation? Is that what we're about to do?
And also to your point earlier about like sort of not seeing Corin Hawthorne, not seeing videos of her doing the church circuit. Are there videos of Tori Kelly doing the church circuit?
I highly, highly doubt it.
So just, you know, same rules. Just want to say. Okay, before we go, there's been something that's interesting happening in terms of gospel's conversation with musicians who do not make what we think of as traditional gospel music. And this is something that's come up a lot in the last, I'd say, 2 years. You heard it in Serpent with Feet. You heard it in Blood Orange, in Isaiah.
Donna Taylor.
Yes, Tiana. I thought Tiana sounded pretty good at Sunday Service, just for what it's worth.
She did, but yeah. It was weird watching people act like she may never would have made it.
Fair point.
We will not do that to Marvin Sapp.
No. There'll be no erasing of Marvin Sapp. Talk to people through who Serpent with Feet is and where this sound and idea comes from.
So Serpent with Feet is a singer-artist from Baltimore who was raised in the church, mm-hmm. and he's a queer artist, and he incorporates all of those things into his music, mm-hmm. and it becomes this very church flamboyant, mm-hmm. like pulpit kind of thing, even when he performs live, and you can hear it on the records.
But the music itself is industrial, it's electronic, it's ambient, it's
everything.
It's richly textured, but it's gospel informed.
But then you'll hear like a sang choir come out of the air, right? And there's a lot of choral arrangements on mm-hmm. the album, and he kind of very much plays with, because he sings of loving men, mm-hmm. and so he'll use sort of sacred lingo to sing of loving men, much the way, like, he is someone who really puts it in front of you, just how thin that line is between like singing of secular love mm-hmm. and singing of like sacred love. Mm-hmm. And he's just the best.
Well, as you pointed out in your review of his album, the hymn in his work, that's the, you know, it's much more ambiguous than in the work of some other performers who are working in a more traditional gospel idiom.
Round tree.
When his limbs hung to the floor, thought he was inviting me to love him more. But he broke my heart and said,
Sequoia,
he climbing up.
Were you living in New York yet when he did the first show that was in the church in Williamsburg?
Oh, God, I wish.
Oh, you weren't here yet. It was really, really impressive.
Now my feelings are hurt.
I'm so sorry. I'll show you photos. I have
videos.
I
don't
videos.
Want that.
Okay, I have videos, I think. It was very, very impressive. And again, I think sometimes, and this gets back to the Kanye conversation as well, use of gospel as source material and kind of like, how does that complicate its like the kind of purity of the sanctity of the message. I felt, having been to any number of gospel performances and then going to a Serpent with Feet show, I was like, oh, this is extremely sanctified stuff. Like, this is,
oh no, for sure.
It's like very sanctified stuff.
And I think there's also, you know, a symbolic function in mm-hmm. Serpent with Feet being a queer person working in like gospel textures. Mm-hmm. The church hasn't always been super welcoming to the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's also, you know, he's making a message with it as well. Because on the album prior to Soil, he was a little more abstract about like saying him
yes.
and singing about loving men. Whereas this one, he really was like,
he
no,
went for it.
Him.
Yes.
Not you, not them, mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I don't know. It just feels like a dialogue within itself, right?
Absolutely. Let's listen for a second to something off the Blood Orange record from last year. Let's listen to Holy Will with Ian Isaiah.
Lord, I just want to be rooted and grounded in thee. Invite me. gotta be. Highly favored envy. Lord, make me. Lord Jesus, bless me.
Another example of kind of interrogation of via appreciation. One of my favorite songs on this Blood Orange record.
Oh my God. He went in.
Very much so. What's your vibe on Ian's solo stuff?
Oh, it's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And it's similar to Serpent in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I find it less successful, personally. The intent, I feel like, totally bought in on.
And his voice is phenomenal. And what Ian does on that Blood Orange record and what he does in general, you can't mail it in. Like, you can't. It's not the kind of voice. It's not the kind of singing you get having, like, not spent time in a church. Like, it's very specific and unique. I think that when a lot of sounds we hear, like, on records and, like, secular records are kind of synthetic, when someone really comes in and they're doing it and they got it from they got this soul from the church. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. You know, Ian is an affiliate of the Ghetto Gothic crew and Hello to Venus. That music and that energy is also welcome in those spaces. It's the give and take is fascinating and really productive, I think. And I'm actually really glad to see him get some shine via the Blood Orange thing and some other recent projects.
Ian deserves all.
So before we go for real, let's go out with some real saving. Let's both give a song by an artist that we haven't really talked about or from 10 or 20 years ago, just something that you think people need to hear to be carried out into the rest of their day.
I'm going to go with Donnie McClurkin's Great Is Your Mercy. I felt like I just heard it a lot when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I think my mother is a big fan of Donnie McClurkin, and it's one of my favorites of his.
All right, let's go with some Donnie.
Great is your mercy towards me. Great is your grace. Help me say, help me say.
Great is your mercy towards me.
Yes.
Your loving kindness towards me. Your tender mercy. Day after day, forever faithful towards me,
and you're always providing for me.
Great.
Okay, and now before I close out with my choice, I do want to say that I used to work with a young woman many, many, many years ago who was like a intern or an editorial assistant at a place I was working. And prior to that, she had been a waitress, and she said that she had waited on Donnie McClurkin and he didn't leave a tip. I was actually hoping we'd have an opportunity for me to tell that story, and like, you just opened the door. So thank you. As we go out, I really like Commissioned. Commissioned was a sort of supergroup. A lot of Fred Hammond was in it. Marvin Sapp was in it. I believe me and Doreen have had a conversation about it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Hi, Doreen.
If
you've made it this far, but I hope you have. So
many shout outs.
A lot of shout outs today. Commissioned. First of all, I need some t-shirts with Commissioned album covers on them, because the Commissioned album art from the night. I haven't been able to find any. But if anybody's got an extra large, please drop me an email, podcast@whattimes.com. let us go out on a real R&B gospel number from Commissioned. Quasi, not really new, not really Jack, not really swing, but let's go out with some of that 90s energy. This is Until My Change Comes.
Away, feel the warmth of us.
That is our show. Thank you to Brianna Younger.
Thank you for having me.
Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email. There were a lot of email requests. So go back, listen to the show, write down all the email requests, and send me the answers at podcastnytimes.com. And subscribe to the podcast anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer in the room today, Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.